If we were a United Church or a Presbyterian Church or an Anglican Church, we would be very familiar with something called the Christian calendar. As a Baptist church, and some of you are imports to the Baptist church from others who aren't from those other denominations, the idea of there being a Christian calendar might seem a little strange to you. You might be able to stretch your imagination and think, well, yeah, there's Christmas and Easter, and that's kind of Christian holidays. But there's actually a very elaborate Christian year that's wrapped up, which actually begins with Advent, with the coming of Jesus, works its way through through Christmas, through Epiphany, which comes after after Christmas, through Lent and into Easter, into Pentecost, into then the post-Pentecost season, and then up to this Sunday, which would be considered the last Sunday of the Christian year, which is called Christ the King Sunday. This is the Sunday, before we start focusing on the baby Jesus, this is the Sunday when we focus on the reign of Christ, on the end of it all. It is all culminated, and Jesus Christ sits at the right hand of God on the throne of heaven, and he is the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. And so that's what this Sunday is all about in the Christian calendar. It's a strange Sunday to be reading the story of the crucifixion of Jesus. You would think we would be reading some great psalm or something from Revelation that paints this amazing picture of Jesus Christ enthroned and people bowing down and worshiping him and all of those kind of things. But instead, we have a picture of Jesus hanging crucified on a cross, with the only crown being a crown of thorns. It's kind of a strange reading for Christ the King Sunday. But it makes sense, because that's the kind of king Jesus was and is. He isn't the kind of king who sits on a throne for all to see, with supplicants coming and falling on their faces, begging favors from him. He is the king who recognized from the very beginning that his role is to serve, that he is a servant, that his goal is the redemption of all of humanity. His goal is that all of humanity would be reconciled to God himself. And to do that, he set aside any jewels and crowns and power that could come his way, and instead chose to wear a crown of thorns. That's why today, Christ the King Sunday, it fits that we remember the kind of king Jesus was, the kind of king who went to the cross. Here's the picture of this story. Jesus is hanging there outside in the outskirts of the city, as hundreds and hundreds, perhaps thousands of people had done before him. It was a very familiar Roman method of death for people who were enemies of the state. Jesus is hanging on a cross. He'd been beaten. He'd been humiliated. He was likely shamed by being naked, hung up there, nails driven through his wrists and through his ankles, these thorns wedged onto his head. And on either side of him, there are two other criminals. Luke just tells us they're criminals. Matthew and Mark tells us they're probably robbers or bandits. They were probably the kind of people who hid on the side of the road and robbed people, potentially murdered people as they were passing by for their riches, all their amazing riches. And they were hanging up there as well, as criminals condemned and convicted by the state. There are other people all around on this scene. There's also a whole bunch of Roman soldiers, the people who were actually responsible for getting these three men hung up on these crosses, for getting the nails driven in, for getting the crosses. They would have been nailed in while the cross was lying on the ground, and then they had to hoist these massive big contraptions up with the bodies hanging up on them. The Roman soldiers, they're the ones who were responsible for it. They're the ones who, before they even got to that hill, were the ones who mocked Jesus, who flogged him, who spit upon him, who called him all sorts of names. Those are the Roman soldiers. Also interspersed in the crowds are some very proud-feeling Jewish leaders who had been looking for ways for 3 years to deal with this guy who was just wreaking havoc among the Jewish people as a whole. They were looking for ways that they could get this guy to this place without causing riots, and they'd finally achieved it. They are among the crowd of people looking at their handiwork, glad that now things can go back to normal amongst their people. There are also some disciples. Not all the disciples, Because a number of disciples ran the other way. A number of disciples went into hiding, abandoned him. His friends abandoned him at the worst time of his life. But some of his disciples were there. Some of the women who had served him and followed him were there in desperate, deep despair as they watched Jesus suffer. And then there were the bystanders, all the people, some of them there just because it was the best entertainment the day had going for it. Some of them there because it was just a spectacle that made them curious. Some of them had just stopped on their journey into the city for a little snack, and there happened to be a crucifixion happening at the time. There were massive crowds watching what was going on. The leaders in the crowd scoffed at him, saying, "He saved others, let him save himself." This little refrain, "let him save himself," is repeated 3 times in this short story. Let him save himself. There's a sign over Jesus' head that says, "This is the King of the Jews." They've heard the stories of Jesus' incredible miracles. Jesus even brought somebody back to life who had died. Surely he can save himself. Come on, Jesus. You saved everybody else. Why not save yourself now? Oh, you're not looking so great anymore, are you? Hanging up there on the cross. Where are all your powers now? Where are all the miracles? Where's God, who you call your Father? He's not here. Save yourself if you can. These are the people who were responsible for his conviction, for his crucifixion. These are the people looking at him and saying, if you really had the strength and power you claim to have, you could come down off of that cross. These are the people out of whose mouths are coming the same words that Satan spoke to Jesus at the beginning of Jesus' ministry, back when he was in the desert. He'd just been baptized. He went off into the desert to fast for 40 days, and that's where the devil came to him to tempt him. And one of the great temptations of the devil was, you don't have to go the way that God wants you to go, because you and I both know that's not going to end well. Instead, set yourself up as a real king. Instead, set yourself up with the power that you've got. You are the Son of God, so the whole world could be bowing down to you. Do that. It's the same kind of thought that the leaders are shouting at him from in the crowds underneath his cross, saying, come on, Jesus, it's not too late. You can be the kind of king that doesn't get crucified. You can be the kind of king before whom everybody bows. Everybody doesn't have to be standing here laughing at you, mocking you, cursing you. They could be bowing. You could wield absolute and total control. Come on, Jesus, if you are who you say you are, then why don't you just save yourself? How often do we say the same kind of thing to ourselves and to other people around us? We look and we say, strength, real strength is in what you can do for yourself. Save yourself. Be strong. Pull yourself up by the bootstraps. Go get a job. Figure it out. Save yourself. Or in more contemporary language, man up. That's only for you guys. I don't know what we say to women. Maybe we say man up to women too. I don't know. One of my favorites, suck it up, buttercup. All of these things that we say, which essentially what we're saying is, you can do it on your own. Come on. Save yourself. Get on with it. Don't be weak. Don't hang on a cross. Don't suffer. Don't put up with this when you don't have to. Stand up tall and strong and make the world recognize how great you are. And yet Jesus didn't save himself. He continued to hang on that cross. And the soldiers hanging out down at the bottom of the cross, they're throwing dice to see who's going to get his really great clothes, who's going to get this, who's going to get that from the other guy. They're betting and gambling so that they could go away with a little bit of wealth from this day of entertainment. And they shout out, if you are the king of the Jews, just like the sign says, if that is who you are, then save yourself. Save yourself. We want to see a miracle right here in front of us. If you are truly the king, then you don't have to die this way. Save yourself. Imagine if Jesus had chosen to save himself. Imagine if he had said, oh, you're right. I don't have to hang here. I'm the Son of God. And down he popped. What would it have said about the rest of his life that he had lived till then? See, this is the thing that God did in Jesus, is that in Jesus, God became, in the words of Alana more is that God became one of us. In Jesus, God chose to completely connect with humanity. He set aside that power. He set aside those rights. He set it all aside to share in every single aspect of human life, including the judgment, the condemnation, the punishment, and the death. If at the last minute he'd said, "Nope, death, that's as far as I'm willing to go. I'm not willing to go there." And if at that moment he'd said, "I'm no longer going to share in what humanity has," he wouldn't be the Messiah. He wouldn't be able to be our Savior. Jesus could have claimed it all for himself. He could have said, "I don't want to be this kind of a king. There's another kind of king that I want to be. I don't want to be all that human, because there's a lot about being human that is not very good. There's a lot about it, like the condemnation, like the fact that beside me I see the worst of humanity. I see criminals on either side, but not just there. There's this mass of human weakness and brokenness all around me. I'm Jesus. I don't want to associate completely with all of that. That's not who I am. I'm not a criminal. I'm not a sinner." He could have stood up and said, "Hey, you have to treat me the way I'm due. You have to give me my justice. You have to recognize my purity and my holiness and my goodness. I don't deserve to be here." He could have come down off the cross to prove it all to them. But that wasn't the whole reason that Jesus was here. Jesus was here to share with humanity and everything there was to do with humanity, regardless of whether or not he deserved it. And the reason he had to share with all the parts of humanity was so that the way would be open for us to share with all the parts of Jesus, who is the Son of God. The only reason we can know ourselves as being children of God, as being adopted into the family of God, is because Jesus first shared all the parts of humanity so that we could turn around and share in Jesus, particularly share in his resurrection. Imagine if he'd popped off the cross. That would have been maybe great for him, not so great for us. And then you've got one of the criminals, one of the robbers or bandits. And he says the same thing as has been said already twice before. "Are you not the Messiah? Save yourself." And then he adds a little thing. "And us." If you're going to pop yourself down off the cross, take us with you. We don't want to be here. It hurts up here. But he's going, "I'm not really sure that crucifixion is really, I don't think what I did was worth that. I don't think I deserve that. I think that I'm more like you, Jesus, and I'm up here, and I'm really not so guilty as they're making me out to be. And so maybe you could save yourself, and because everybody says that you can, maybe you could save yourself, and maybe you could take us along with you." Total misunderstanding of what salvation is, of what saving is. See, saving is not about changing bad circumstances to good ones. This is one of the great things that we forget all the time. We think that if Jesus really saved us, then everything will be great. Everything will be easy. Everything will be good, because that's what God is saving us from, the bad stuff. Well, any of you who give even a second of thinking of how that measures up with your own life experience, I know a lot of your life experiences, you know that that just doesn't hold water. You can know yourself to be saved by Jesus and to still have bad things happening in your life. Salvation isn't about changing bad circumstances for good ones. Salvation, real salvation, isn't about coming down off the cross. Real salvation is about knowing and trusting without a shred of doubt, without a second's hesitation, or maybe with a whole lot of hesitation and a whole lot of doubt, but still choosing to have faith anyways, that we abide in God's love. That no matter what the circumstances, even on a cross, God has us covered. He has us held in his hands, like the children of his that we are. Psalm 46 is the great, great psalm. God is our refuge and strength. This is what salvation means. It means to know this absolutely, even when you're hanging on a cross. God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. Therefore, we will not fear, though the earth should change, though the mountains shake in the heart of the sea. This is really fitting, isn't it? for what's going on in our world. Though its waters roar and foam, though the mountains tremble with its tumult, be still and know that I am God. This is what this criminal didn't get. He thought the answer was in Jesus coming down off the cross and taking him down with him so they could go back about their life. And Jesus is hanging there, refusing to do it. I think, thinking to himself, maybe even saying it out loud, I don't know. That's not what it's about, people. You're missing the point. It's not about the here and now. It's not about this life right now. It's not about trying to make sure everything's just smooth and easy for us right now and here. That's what it would be about if I listened to you all and I just came down off this cross. But you're missing the importance of the cross itself. Martin Luther, who was one of the great Protestant reformers, he wrote the hymn, A Mighty Fortress Is Our God. This was one of the most profound hymns written in a time of horrendous persecution. One author says, this hymn became the battle cry of the people, a great source of strength and inspiration, even for those who were martyred for their convictions. It's the words of Psalm 46. God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in times of trouble. This is what salvation is. It's not about just being removed from the current troubles in your life. It's something so much bigger than that. It's being able to wade through those troubles. It's being able to hang even in excruciating pain on your own cross that God has set before you and still rest in God and be still in God, knowing that he can be your refuge, he can be your strength, and that that is enough. There was one person who got it in this scene. It was the other criminal of all people. The other guy hanging on the other side who was probably convicted of things like highway robbery and things like that. He made the Roman roads unsafe. And he tells the other guy, he says, just shut up. You don't know what you're talking about. He didn't say it. That's not biblical language, but I'm pretty sure that's what he meant. And then he says this. He looks to the best that he can in his excruciating agony to Jesus. And he says, Jesus, remember me when you come in your kingdom. This is one of the most powerful prayers of faith in our entire Bible. It's so simple. Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom. He's hanging there. He doesn't ask to be rescued. He doesn't ask to come down off the cross. He doesn't mock Jesus. He doesn't expect Jesus to come down off his own cross. He somehow knows that there's something bigger going on here. And all he wants is the mercy of God in the midst of it. He saw that despite sharing all the aspects of humanity, there was something different about Jesus. And he saw that his only hope lay not in mocking Jesus or trying to get Jesus to get off the cross and make everything better. He saw that his only hope lay in a desperate cry for mercy. That maybe, maybe God would hold him, a criminal, a robber, a convict, an enemy of the state. Maybe God would even hold him in the palm of his hands. Maybe. I don't know if he even believed it or if he was just so desperate. He prayed this out. Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom. He's the model for us. You see, we know how the story ended. We know that it didn't end with the death. We know that Jesus rose from the dead again. We know that because he was willing to stay on that cross, because he was willing to take that path, God raised him from the dead. And because Jesus had shared in everything to do with humanity, we can share with Jesus all the way to the resurrection, that we also have hope when we face even the worst of circumstances, even death itself, we have hope that if Jesus would say to the criminal beside him, I promise you, this day you'll be with me in paradise. If he would say to the criminal, the highway robber, the convict beside him, I've heard your prayer and you get what you ask for. Won't he say the same for us? Not if all we're praying is release from these current struggles, not saying that we shouldn't pray those things. But maybe our prayers could be so much more simple. Jesus, remember me. Remember me. It's a prayer of extraordinary faith. Do we have the faith of the condemned man? Do we deny that we even deserve to be there like the first criminal did? And thus demand something that we think is rightfully ours? Or do we own who we are and plead in faith for a mercy that we also don't deserve? Next week, we're at least going to have a tree. There'll be lights. Probably in your houses, you're starting to decorate. You're starting to think about where your own tree's going. You're starting to put away some things so you can make room for other things. There's lights outside of people's houses. We're thinking about Christmas. There's the hope, the joy, the peace, the love, the light, all of those things that are wrapped up as we look toward the birth of this baby who is the Son of God. But before we get there, it's so important for us to pause and remember that this baby who would be king paid an extraordinary price. Not to be the kind of king who would wield it over us, but be the kind of king for whom grace and mercy were absolutely his to offer every single one of us. This is the kind of king to whom we can say, remember me when you come into your kingdom, and we can know without a shadow of a doubt that he will.